I will say this. It's been a while, but for a long fucking time, if I was in an improv with Jim Rash or Steve Pierce or something like that, and you'd be on stage, inevitably, and you ask the audience for a suggestion of something, it would almost always be bald or Mr. Clean or something, something like, you know, like, it's, the, there's nothing, there's no other thing you can body shame people for anymore, but like, bald is still okay.
Completely.
Like, you're not going to say that about anybody else's body who's standing up on stage, but like, bald! And then everyone laughs, and you're standing on stage, and it feels like you're in high school with everyone pointing and laughing at you.
I know.
And the improv hasn't even started.
All right. Hello and welcome to Bald Talk, the podcast where two bald comedians, most times, interview bald celebrities, lay people, aristocrats, commoners, head honchos, lowly schlubs, and really anyone bald about being bald. I am Brian Husky, and I am flying solo today because Charlie is on a work assignment. So we're very happy for Charlie. It's top secret government stuff, so I can't talk about it. But we have a fantastic guest today who has a full head of baldness on his head. He is a hilarious actor, writer, and improviser. He is known for such works as Bridesmaids, The Heat, Spy, and TV shows like All Rise, Two Broke Girls, Reno 911, and Nobodies, just to name a few. He's a long affiliated with the Groundlings Improv Troupe, where he still performs? I don't know. No, we'll find out. He shakes his hands a little bit. Maybe if they even are doing shows now, who knows. But please welcome Mitch Silpa.
Hi. Sorry to hear about Charlie. I mean, I'm happy he's working, but I'm sorry he's not here.
Yes. He's got a writing thing, and he's like, I have to disappear for like a month. I was like, great, go do it.
It's good for him.
Yeah.
But a good reason to disappear. And to answer your question about the Groundlings, every once in a while they are doing shows. They are still doing shows. It's very like, the audience is all masked and everyone has to prove they're vaccinated and all this stuff. And you have to get tested to do the show. But I every once in a while I'll do a Thursday night show. But I haven't performed.
You've done some live ones?
I have. I've done like maybe three in the last year. I mean, it's very weird at first, and then it's also weird how normal it is. Yeah, you forget. And it's also weird to perform in front of an audience at first that has masks on, because you feel
like some weird sexual ceremony that you're being
sort of, or like those, you know, those movies where there's like someone's performing a surgery and there's like the doctors are all up above them looking down. It's what it feels like, that audiences are all the doctors, the expert doctors looking at
us. That's funny. So you're doing like a 1910 open heart surgery.
Exactly.
Around.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. I've not performed live in since March 13th. What is that?
2020? 2020 is when this all went down.
Yeah, is it? My sense of time is gone.
Yeah.
But man, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm really, and we were just talking before we got on about, I passed on doing some shows in Colorado at this place we always go to every year, because it just was like travel and then four nights of shows, and they said, they didn't put masks on the website, but they're saying they're doing masks that night and vaccination or 72-hour, within 72 hours, negative test. And I was like, I don't know.
I know.
Like, I see people, they're not, if it's not on the website, they're going to raise hell. Some asshole is going to be there like, ooh, you know, take his thing off. And the 72-hour thing makes me nervous.
Yeah.
You know, the window for Omicron is real short.
Yeah.
So.
Drew Droege and I, you know Drew.
Yeah.
We did a show in November at the Dynasty Typewriter.
Right.
And it was like, that has like almost 200 seats, and it was full. But they were like, you have to be vaccinated, you have to wear masks, and this is LA, and and I would venture to say it was a predominantly gay crowd, but even still, there's people, like, I know people in the audience, there were people who were like, they bought in there and they pulled their masks down.
Yep.
And then, you know, everyone's making passive aggressive comments. No one's saying anything directly. Like, I can't believe people don't have their mask on. And then they shamed. But even like, God damn it, we're all trying to Be safe. Just be cool. It's a 45-minute show.
I know. The flags that people, you know, choose to die on are just so misapplied. I'm like, come on, guys. There's bigger stuff.
Yeah.
Like our government and our democracy. Maybe we should. That kind of thing.
Yeah, things are great.
But you know what? Enough about the real world. Let's talk about the fantasy world of a bald person,
sure,
which we share in common. I would say, like, I am shocked that you and I have not been at more auditions together.
Yeah.
I remember passing you at Fox one time at a fitting. I can't remember for what show, but I was like, oh, I don't.
We have read for the same thing and we don't know it. And we have mutual friends and stuff. Yeah, it's weird. We should be in the same bald world.
I know. At least in the commercial realm. But I mean, I feel like in commercials, it's like if they want a physical joke, they will put that in the thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I don't go. I took a break from commercials for a while, years. I never done well commercially. Not my thing.
I'm surprised I have done pretty well at it. And I said a great foot, like bags of gratitude around it, because it's like saved my ass so many times.
Sure.
But I have such a disdain for it, you know? Like, it's almost like, I don't know, it's like I'm a successful sort of douchebag dater or something. It's like, this is garbage. And they're like, ooh, what? Yeah.
I know. It makes me feel terrible. It makes me feel terrible to go to the auditions and then like, and then you hear, like, oh, everybody gets called back. I'm like, well, I mean, I didn't. Nobody wants me. They're like, you're really funny. We just do not want you to sell our product.
Yeah. It really does. I feel like if it's like, yeah, he's not it's something. He's not like the drawing. We have this drawing, and it's like slightly. It's not wearing the same suit as this drawing. But how long have you been in this? I mean, because you are shaved headed.
Yeah,
there's not a lick of hair on your head.
I shave at least twice a week because I still get that stubble stuff. I shaved last night, so I am clean shaven right now. I have been.
You did it for the podcast. That's so sweet.
Yeah, in honor. I started really significantly like losing my hair in my like mid-20s. I didn't start like shaving until I was in my early 30s. I was in denial for a while.
So what did you have? Did you have like a ring like I've got, or?
What was happening with my head was the sides of my head were thick, but the top were like growing in real like wiry like pubes, like real like it looked bad. And I can still if I let it grow like a little bit now, I will get stubble, but I know that if it grew out more it would be, I can't imagine how horrible it would look now.
I think I've got the same thing, because I will, like, you know, we were complaining about our self-taping situations at home and stuff, and I, you know, normally you do an audition and you never see it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now we're just scrutinizing every square inch of myself.
It's awful.
And so many times I've like swept this middle part, the little wispies in the middle back, and they just sort of like just stick up. So I had this one thing where I was supposed to be this like hyper confident, like type A, everything was like slick looking except for this like just like, I don't know, this like dying mohawk in the center of my head was just sort of like fluttering there for the whole thing. I was like, well, there you go, that's it.
I would be so happy if they would wig me like all the time. Like, I don't mind that. There's been a couple times I've been, do you remember the show Joey, the spinoff of Friends?
Yeah.
So I did an episode of Joey, like it was maybe their third or fourth episode, when there was like it was like they all had a lot of hope because before they figured out this thing's not working. But it was like one of my first like guest stars that I had gotten, or kind of a bigger thing. And it was a part of a, like, I played an understudy. Joey was in a play and I was gay. I was a gay understudy and I had a cold and he had to go on and he didn't want to. So he came to my house and tried to convince me. And I was very wry and, you know, making all about Eve references. But they came up to me and during one of the, before the run through for like the network, or I think it was the network run through or the studio, I have no idea. But they asked me, they go, would you mind wearing a wig? Because my character had the flu. And I'm like, Oh, no. I mean, it was at the Groundlings. I don't care. I'll wear a wig in a second. But they said...
Wait, could your character wear a wig because you had a cold?
That's, they said... I think they were looking out for me. But they were saying they're firing people left and right. And we don't want to give anybody a reason to be fired. They said, we don't want them to think... You have a flu. We don't want them to think you have chemo, is what they said. But I was like, at the time, I'm like, this is code for AIDS. Like, because I don't know. But it was all, but I was like, sure, I'll wear a wig. So they put a wig on me, and I guess I tricked the network or the studio. They didn't fire me. But there was no need for my character to have hair.
That's hilarious.
Because bald people get the flu, too.
That's like a double dose of
insults.
Yeah, of insults. Or like you're bald and you're gay. So we're just really fling it at you.
Totally.
Wow, that's amazing. I wonder, like, would they try that now? Like, I don't know.
If I was playing a gay character who had the flu, I don't think they would. No, I don't think they would have, even if they thought it. But no one thinks that way anymore.
Did they think that? When was this?
Was this like early, mid-2000s?
Really? I feel that it. I guess that era feels so 90s to me. It feels like at that point, people, I guess not.
And once again, they might not have meant AIDS or anything like that. I was like, you know, I'm old enough to like everything. It's like, you mean I have AIDS? Like, you know, like, I'm, you know.
Yeah. Let's just hope that they only on that rehearsal day they notice you were bald and they're like, oh man, we gotta do something about this.
Oh shit. We watched his tape, but we just realized he's bald.
He's supposed to play his understudy, don't look like anything.
Do you think of yourself as a bald man though?
Yes and no. It really changes. Like, I don't think of myself as a bald man, and then I'll get a reflection or I'll see myself on camera or whatever, and I'm like, oh, right. I forgot that looked that way. But we've talked about this, like, you're kind of like, you're locked into your perspective of yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you see a picture, like, in the mirror, you just have this one angle on yourself, kind of. And I don't go in for the other angles too much. I don't know. But that's a funny thing, like, to say, like, as a bald man, because of what does that mean? I think that has more connotation of how other people define it versus how I defined it.
I sometimes get, I mean, I've been shaving my head since, like I said, like, early 30s, but, like, I just forget sometimes mm-hmm. that I don't have, it's not like I think I have hair. But I just, I look in the mirror or like watch a self tape. I'm like, oh, I'm a bald man. Like when I walk into a room, especially like if you walk into an audition, that is probably the first thing they're thinking about you. Like, oh, this guy's bald. And right. I just don't think about it. And when I have dreams, sometimes when I have hair in my dreams still.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Like a full head or?
Yeah, really good hair.
Yeah. Like, wow.
I'm not going to dream about having bad, thin hair.
I did last night.
Did you?
I did. It wasn't like a major storyline. I talked to the writers and stuff about it, but it like, yeah, there was something about how the middle part was looking. And I can't remember the context. It was something that I had to be kind of aware of it. Maybe it's because I have to do a self tape today. So I was like, all right, I got to make sure the wispies don't pop up or whatever. Yeah. But I think, like, I have only recently been pondering using some Rogaine or something like that because my hairline stuff is kind of going down unevenly.
Oh.
And I'm not, I like, like my girlfriend likes it when it's like kind of Larry David, you know, and longer and stuff. And I'm kind of used to it too. And I think the only solution is just to buzz it down. And I don't know what lurks underneath. Who knows if I've got crazy moles or.
Well, have you ever completely shaven your head?
No, just gotten really short. Maybe like two or three on the buzzer. Maybe like three. Yeah. So there's, who knows?
It was a gradual thing for me. Yeah. Like I would shave it down and down and down and like, and then eventually, I think it was because I had it was a job and they just said, can we shave it all off? And I was like, I wasn't ready for that, but I'm like, sure. And then since then, I just kept it that way. But
I will disclose that I have secretly longed for that to happen. I've really hoped that for a job, someone would be like, well, just gonna shave your head. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because I can't quite do it myself for some reason.
Oh, you don't have the courage yet.
I don't have I think I don't have the courage. And I also have people around me that I want to impress.
Got it.
Who are like, I like it when it's shaggy and weird looking.
Yeah.
I mean, it got like during pandemic, it got bananas. It really
You just let it kind of go.
Just let go. Because, you know, it was the height of those glory days of the pandemic where you just weren't seeing anybody. So we didn't have anybody. Six months in, I had a hair and makeup person that I know come and do it. And it was great. I was like, oh, my God. I felt so clean.
You had somebody come actually over your house and do it?
Yeah, just outside and do it.
God, at that time, everything felt so dangerous.
I know. Even, I know.
It was everything felt dangerous everything. To do that.
Getting groceries, I went through the whole like wiping them down bullshit.
I still kind of wipe. I mean, I don't think. Really? I think I have PTSD. I think I don't always do it. I have the instinct still to like, I gotta wipe this down, even though it makes no logical sense because we were so scared into it at the beginning of this thing.
Yes. Well, so, we were supposed to record last week, and then you got...
I got Omicron.
The thing that I got. You got the popular variant.
I did.
I've spoken to very few who have gotten it.
Really?
Our producer got it, and he was like, it feels like a really bad cold. It was that experience for you?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I feel lucky that that's all it was, but like it was just kind of a cough for a few days and like some congestion and I was tired, but like I'm always tired, so that felt on par. And I felt my stomach felt weird too, like I wasn't hungry for a while. Like I'm just feel like I'm in day 9 right now, so I feel like I'm just starting to get my appetite back. But like,
did you feel like bloated or something, or just like
just kind of like about food, just like the thought of it, just like some of it's like chicken made me feel kind of queasy. Like certain things felt like I felt like I was, it's like the cravings that pregnant women get. Like I was like, ice cream sounded good, and some like cookies sounded good. Like I don't know why that sounded okay, but like actual like chicken or like anything like a salad, it was like no. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just kinda wasn't hungry.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Were you scared? Like I feel like I would be, I think that I've thought about that. I'm like, would I kind of get really scared that it's gonna
I think I've been so terrified. I haven't really thought about it, but like I have been so scared this whole time, and I've really, especially through Omicron, I've really been trying to not, because so many people I know got it, it's so contagious, and I've only been seeing my boyfriend, and then you know I saw a friend, you know, I'm not gonna say it was the typhoid Mary who gave it to me, but it was the one person I decided to see twice outside of my boyfriend that got tested positive, and so of course I got it. But when I got it, I didn't feel like really, like my friend told me I just tested positive. I'm like, oh fuck, I'll go get tested. But I didn't feel terrible, so I wasn't scared. And also, I don't know if this makes any sense, I kind of felt maybe a little relief. Like, like, oh, fuck. Okay. That monster that's been, I feel like it's been chasing me like in a horror movie, got me. And hopefully I will survive and I'll be okay and then come through it with antibodies. So, like.
Yeah. I mean, it is a little bit of that, you know, when people are like, well, screw it. Let's just get it over with.
But yeah, it's not ideal to do that, though.
It's not. I mean, that's, it's crazy. My daughter is every day going to school, and I'm shocked, knocking on this wood table, that she hasn't gotten it, that I haven't gotten it and stuff. But the cases at our school were at the most 44, and now they're down to like 6 or something.
Wow, that's great.
I know. So it's I don't know, but I did have a little period where I was like, all right, well, it's bound to happen.
Yeah.
I can't keep controlling everything.
Yeah, especially because they keep saying, which is so fucking terrifying, where the phrase they keep using is, well, everybody's going to get infected.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all going to get infected. And I was like, how? I don't understand how they can be so sure, like, that, how that's sure.
Right.
Yeah. But I guess... That was a great sentence. How about that? But, like, I guess eventually, I mean, just because we're infected doesn't mean people are going to get sick. They could, yeah. Your body could fight it off or whatever.
But. And I guess they are also, maybe they're just kind of hedging their bets as far as, like, well, a lot of people might have gotten it,
yeah.
They weren't symptomatic, and they just passed the baton on to the next person.
Okay, you know? Here's the cynical thing. Like, do you think, you know, when the CDC changed, we're getting very interesting here, the yeah. rule to, like, from 10 days to 5 days, if 5 days you can go out with a mask on, and yeah. it was so out of nowhere, and a lot of, like, experts were, like, surprised at that, and they're like, mm-hmm. normally there's some sort of a press conference and they explain, like, the science behind this, but, like, why is this? And we all have our own theories, but, like, you know, the economy was suffering. People were like, this was during the holidays.
Yeah.
The airlines were losing, they were canceling flights. I mean, do you think there's part of it that's sort of, and this is very cynical, but might be true, that it, maybe it's not this direct, but, like, part of it is like, look, this thing is going to get everybody. We're all going to get infected. We've told you guys what to do. We have told you repeatedly the best way to not go to the hospital or die from this thing. At this point, we've done it all.
Is this and, so it's like exasperated parenting?
Yeah, like
sort
so,
of like came into play.
So 5 days, and we can, and the Delta airline employees can go back, and yeah. Do you think that's part of it? Like we've told you what to do. This thing's going to spread. Let's spread it. We told you what to do.
I think that it's once again capitalism kind of ruling the day, and it is, like, I mean, for any president or, you know, administration that's in there, you know, they, I don't know, I feel like even if you have the best intentions on how to you know, follow through on what you promised, and you know, Biden sort of he definitely is in line with what I want from the world and stuff. He still has this albatross of capitalism
yeah.
and military defense. And I've heard, you know, just that is the sort of unstated, like, burden of every president. Just, like, no matter, it's like, it's if Bernie Sanders had gotten in there, I think it would have been impossible for him to avoid, you know, that. It's basically sort of like, no, that's kind of like part of what America is, are these two things. We're yeah. capitalists and we're military power, so
yeah, go along. I would agree. Yeah.
I mean, it's like maybe we'll come around to having a sort of like a two-handed presidency where they one does all the bad stuff and then the other one gets all the good stuff done.
Oh, you think that's where we are right now? There's gonna be the bad sure. president, good president, yeah. bad president, good president.
Yeah, it's totally does. Yeah, that's my plan.
And there's America. So it's like 3 steps forward, 2 steps back, so we are progressing, but mm-hmm. it's just like a real kind of like slow drip.
Yeah, and then you just have the fall guy who will take all the sort of like he or she will appeal to all the, you know, this kind of like uber Americans, and then the progressives will have their sort of their icon.
Yeah,
you know. This is the plan that I have in place.
It seems like
I quietly uprise, handing out flyers to people. Would you like to do this program? It could be so good. Let's go back to baldness.
Sure.
Because saying that you and I have not run into each other at many auditions and stuff, what is your sort of wheelhouse of stuff that you go out for?
It's different things, but for a long while, I don't know if this is a genre of character, but it's like people who wear ties and get upset at other people. Or yeah. I was getting cast a lot in, like, I call them ma'am parts. Like,
uh-huh.
People who say, ma'am. Right. Ma'am, you can't do that, ma'am.
The exasperated straight man?
The gay straight man. The one exactly. Who's like, yeah, you can't, ma'am, I'm telling you for the last time you can't do this. And then they do it again. So that was yeah. So
there's a lot of retail situations.
I had a lot of retail people who a lot of retail people who got like upset at some mundane problem.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like I had that was my part on Two Broke Girls or Curb Your Enthusiasm. I think I did that too on that show. Just a really upset Banana Republic employee who got very mad at Larry David. It's been different. I've been lucky that it's sort of like different things that I read for, but that seemed to be my genre for a while. Do you go up for those type of parts?
I go, my thing is like I get either kind of like emasculated middle management types, like frustrated doctors, principals.
Yeah.
Or I get sort of like hard-nosed doctors, lawyers, corporate types.
Yeah.
I'm auditioning for like an angry judge today.
Ooh, fun.
So, yeah, I know. I get to channel some frustration into it.
Yeah, no, I've been playing lawyers recently too. That's a new thing. And lawyers and teachers, I'm all of a sudden doing.
Yeah, it's so funny like how, I mean, I think that we talked about this a bunch, but it's this strange thing of like, your physical type sort of slots you into, or has slotted me into sort of just like, I mean, people are like, oh, that's really cool. You get to go out there. It's like, yeah, but they don't give them much more than just like a note. You just play this note. You know what I mean? And you're there to kind of like be the other side of this joke. You know, I was like a regular on a TBS show, and that was cool because I got to play that note, but in different, I mean, it's amazing. Just like, that type of character I played in different contexts and in encounters, that's where you get to sort of like act. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And otherwise you're just kind of like, all right, yeah, just do your thing. Do your side of it.
Yeah, that's most of it. It's not multi-dimensional.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, there'll be something. I think like I got to, there was a show I did called Nobody's that was like two seasons on like TV Land.
Mm-hmm.
And I recurred on that. And my character was kind of he was like a fun dick, but like, you know, my friends were created the show and they they gave me an episode where I'm like nicer to this child or like,
right.
I got to show other sides to it.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
That guy. So that was, that was fun to act like a full person.
I think that's, I mean, it's so funny. Like the, you know, we, I think this is kind of true for most fields. You know, any endeavor, you're like, okay, I want to be a writer, and you have your idea of what being a writer is and stuff, and it's just like any job is sort of like, it's probably like 5% of the time it's like, this is fucking great, and the other time it's just like kind of a job where you're just kind of doing the same thing, and that's why you're good at it, and we need this done, so bring your skill set and fix this not funny sink and make it funny.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah. I sort of settled into that at one point because I definitely started to notice when I was going to set where I'd be like, I'm feeling a little disillusioned in some weird way. And I think that's part of it is that there's so, in this field at least, there's such polarities of feelings and kind of like emotional highs and lows, you know, and expectations and disappointments and stuff. So when you get a job, you're like, oh my God, this is going to be huge. And this is kind of like, oh. That was kind of boring.
And you're also not the most important or even near anything important.
Yeah, yeah.
I think maybe we're always chasing that feeling that we had, like when we started doing plays in like high school or whenever, that sort of like, that like high that you just got for like that as being a theater nerd, that you always think that's what we're always chasing. But it's like, that doesn't come. Very often.
Yeah, it comes. It's like, and I guess that's, I think that's just the sort of like mechanism of like TV and film is like, it's tiny little drips of it. You know what I mean? And then it's step and repeat and step and repeat. And you sort of like until you get it right. because, you know, you like you and I come from improv, and that is just this unknown, like, put me in the cannon, launch me, and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And I definitely, like, I was like, oh, man, there's an addictive quality to it where you're like, you just come to expect that sort of in your interactions and your work and, you know, and that kind of thing. I can sort of see how people would get a little like, oh, you're an improviser, huh? Are you just going to Robin Williams all over the place here? Or like, what are we going to deal with?
Yeah.
Not knowing that it's like a skill set that can be.
Well, don't you also feel like I've now gotten to a point where I love improv. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am like, I just want to say the lines. Like, yeah. I'm fine with not putting a tag on the end of an audition, or like, it's a pressure, like, and it often feels like real schmucky to do it. Like, you know, like if someone just says, just say the lines, I'm like, that's
great.
God, what a relief to not have to like improvise. I mean, it's, and often it depends on who you're doing it with or what it's like, but there, it just feels good to sometimes not have to improvise.
Yeah.
I
did something just before Christmas. Like, I hadn't done anything in a long time, and it was like one of these things, like, oh, a lot of people here don't know what they're doing. And at one point they're like, oh, we're just going to kind of open it up and like, let the improv happen. And so that was like myself and one other person had any kind of training in that, and everyone else didn't. And it just was chaos, you know? And I ended up not saying anything.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what I do when I'm the same. I get very quiet when it's like everyone's just gunning for jokes and like, it's not, this is not what I think improv is. And like, and it's not fun. And it just makes me feel like it's why, like I've written on, like I write too, but I don't enjoy being in a writer's room that it gives me anxiety to like pitch jokes with other people, and I you know, who are really great at it, but I don't like the competitive. I don't like improv for the competition. I'd like want to build a scene, and when you're like doing it on a set and there's an awareness, if you've been doing it for a long time, going, well, none of this is going to make none of us is going to make it in, because everyone's just like fucking around and it has nothing to do with the story or the characters. And you kind of know the difference between when you're improvising to like, as if it with that has something to do with the story, and when you're just like out joking each other and
completely trying to make the boom operator laugh.
Ugh,
yeah,
it's awful.
It is funny to me how many, like, there's a sort of like a breakdown in entertainment that's sort of like people who are collaborative, and that's why they go into it, or they're competitive, and that's why they go into it.
You're talking about comedy or just like acting in general? Or
just kind creating? Of entertainment in general. You
yeah.
know what I mean? It's sort of like it's a strange, I mean, of course it's like, it's a look at me kind of business, but so many people, especially, I mean, more so in improv, you know, the difference between like stand up versus improv is like, improv is like, yeah, we're in this together, and stand ups are like, nope, me.
Yeah, but I also think, like, maybe when I was younger, like in my early 20s and stuff, and I was doing it, I was more like competitive. Like, am I doing improv? It was more like, I got to get the laughs, I got the laughs. But I guess some people don't grow out of that.
Yeah.
And you start to learn. I mean, this is, excuse me for my pretentious comment, but you start to, more the longer you do improv, you go, oh, there's an art to this. There is an art. Yeah. To like building a scene, and it's not everything you're told as a student about, like, it's really not about the joke. It's really not, because at first, when you're a student, it goes, yes, it is. It's about saying funny things.
Yeah.
But it's not. And it's not even fun. And once you let go of that, it's so much more fun.
Yeah.
To not have that pressure.
Yeah. I know. It's straight. And it's like just what you said, like the longer you do, my sort of ambition. Around that stuff is now I'm just like, I identify with all this kind of quiet old men that I used to be like, God, that guy's boring. I was like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like really kind of sit and like observe and then chime in every so often.
Yeah, improv in chairs. Let's just do improv in chairs.
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely what it is.
Let's just sit and talk for a while and make things
rock and chair improv.
Sure.
Totally.
Only on Bald Talk.
Ever heard of social media? We have, and no big deal, we are on it. Check us out on Instagram at Bald Talk Pod or on Twitter at Bald Talk Podcast.
Please make sure to like, rate, and review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We don't care where you get them, just get them.
No judgment, wherever you get them, anywhere, anywhere.
Anywhere, whatever, no judgment.
As long as you listen, we don't give a fuck.
Only on Bald Talk.
This is, you know, we kind of ask this sometimes. Do you think if you had a head of hair, you would have a different career?
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah. I think that's really an interesting question. Yeah. I mean, I think how can it not at least influence how you're cast or something like that, or how you're thought of, or how you thought of yourself? Because like everything that happens to us like makes us who we are. So like the whole process, at least for me, of like my losing my hair, I mean, it was such a huge insecurity. Like it such a huge insecurity. And I wasn't, I remember being like in my 20s, just getting out of college. I was working at a bookstore in Century City Mall, Brentano's. And I was on a break, walking, it was hot day, sunlight, like walking their stores, and I looked at my reflection in some like department store window, and I saw the top of my head, and it looked like I could see like my scalp in between my hair, and I'm like, I was like, oh, something's wrong. It's the weird window.
That mirror is, that window must have some imperfections in it.
Yeah, like it's a carnival window or something like that. but it took me a while to, a long time to go, oh, I'm really, my hair's thinning. Mm-hmm. And it made me feel really insecure, and I was trying to do something about it. Like I went to a doctor. I think I started doing like Rogaine or whatever it was called then. And nothing was taking. And, that made me, I don't know, maybe it made me feel a certain way about myself, and then it made me, I mean, I'm going a roundabout way about casting, but like, if I had hair, maybe I'd be confident in a different way, and then certain roles I would be more gravitating towards or be thought of as, I don't know.
It's a weird kind of like, I mean, it's basically like, if you were born in a different family, what would your life be different? It's like, well, yes. Probably. But it is, like you said, it's the sum of the parts of your just whatever package you get put into.
Yeah. And I also think that at the time, like, there wasn't a lot of bald actors who were like leading men or like thought of as like any sort of romantic. They were always like, there wasn't a lot. Now it just feels like it's not a thing. I don't think anymore.
But it's not as much like we've broken it down. It's like if you action heroes can be bald, you know what I mean? Very few kind of like, I mean, name the network TV like leading men who have hair or who don't have hair. None, basically.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. This is gonna show my age, but I'm immediately like, Telly Savalas. But that's like the 70s. But like
Yul Brynner.
And then I'm like, oh, Bruce Willis. But like when Bruce Willis was on TV, he had hair.
Yeah, he had hair. I mean, the closest thing is Jason Alexander, and he was on there because he was a schlub, you know.
Right. But not the lead.
Not the lead.
Yeah, is there any? I guess
I can't think of any, except for Michael Chiklis.
Yes. Oh yeah, Michael Chiklis.
But again, that kind of gets into like the tough guy. Like that's that airs on the side and the Sopranos, Tony Soprano.
Yeah. Is there ever? Can you think of any like sitcoms where the lead is bald?
No, I mean, I was like, was Will Sasso ever the lead in a series? I don't think. I mean, I know he did some pilots, but I don't think he had.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Third Rock from the Sun. Oh, John Lithgow.
Oh, John Lithgow.
Yeah. Okay. But I don't think of him as bald.
No, I don't.
It's a weird thing. Yeah.
I don't even think of him as straight. Is that weird? I know he is, but I've often thought of, I'm like, oh, John Lithgow's not gay? Oh, he's not.
He's not gay.
No, right? He's not.
No, yeah. No, he has that. He has that kind of
he has a lovely gay vibe.
He has a Vermont gay vibe. To
Vermont
him.
Gay. Yeah, Vermont straight is
yeah, gay. He's a maple gay, is what we say. He's a maple gay.
He's such a great actor.
Oh, he's so amazing. So amazing. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I to answer my own question, I think that if I had like a full head of hair, I'm pretty aware. I feel like I know the people I would be going in up against. A lot of them, I feel like my persona would be sort of the same parts. You know what I mean? And the difference, I think, would be what I presented or showed myself doing differently. You know, and I think the closest, like, I did these things for Adult Swim that were kind of in my vein. Like, I like really dark, weird humor and stuff. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And so I ask my agent sometimes to show that, to say, like, he can do this kind of thing. But I think we're kind of, like, a lot of times you're just kind of subject to how people see you, you know?
Like, you could be a bald guy on an ensemble, some sort of ensemble show, but not, like, the husband.
Right. If we were in Britain, if we were in, like, England, I feel like they are, like, they don't care.
They don't care. Let's go to Britain.
Yeah. Let's go live in Britain. We do, have to wear a hat all the time.
We do great there.
We do good. Oh, God. Why do you go to Britain? He's bald. It's
bald.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I get it. Man. Yeah, now I'm going to sort of ponder that question. Because I think it's like, I started losing when I was 17, and now it makes me wonder like how much it informed, because I was very insecure about it.
Yeah, at 17,
time.
I bet.
Yeah, yeah, and it just was sort of like, and I look at pictures of me in college, I was fine. Like I was maybe had a widow's peak starting, but to me, I was like, oh my God, I'm so bald.
Yeah, it's magnified, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, completely.
I see pictures of myself in high school. I had the opposite. I had really thick hair.
Mm-hmm.
I had really thick hair until in all through high school. It was started in college when I started to thin out. Grad school is when I really, really was like, oh, this something's happening.
I had mine. I'm sort of in the camp of we've had a lot of people who are like, their hair was just kind of shitty anyway. So it wasn't like a massive loss. It wasn't like I had a big pompadour.
I do miss like the thing. I think the only thing I miss about it, other than, wigs are great. But like I miss going to get my hair cut and getting my head washed and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That was like heaven.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Maybe that's why I keep the ring, because I still like to do every 6 months.
That's it.
But really, I like getting my hair. I get my hair cut like every 3 to 4 months, you know? I just get it cut really tight, and then it just kind of stays the same version.
So you don't do it to yourself at all?
No. And when I hear people do that, like, it terrifies me.
Cutting your hair or shaving it?
Shaving it. Like Charlie.
I was like,
Charlie did, but he.
I thought you were going to say like Charlie Brown. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Another bald
He's
kid.
Another baldy. Another
bald kid.
Bald kid. I know. One hair right in the middle of his forehead. So sad.
Fucking Charlie Brown.
Clinically depressed, bald kid.
That show, I know we're all over the place what we're talking about, but what the hell? You're down to one host. But like, that show, when you watch it now, which, I mean, every once in a while, like, it is, you're like you said, it's sad.
Well, you know that Charles Schulz was manic depressive.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he like channeled all that, which I'm fascinated by. I love that, knowing that. Because that was my cartoon growing up.
Me too.
But I would be like, this is very strange, you know? And people's take on it was like, oh, it's sort of like the adult world seen through the lens of kids. But it's really like Charles Schulz's, you know, seeing the world through his the cartoon. And I think for that time, you know, maybe he was doing therapy and he felt some shame and stuff because it was the 1950s and stuff. Like, it was sort of starting to be more accepted somewhat, or it was almost, it felt like it was like a new frontier and stuff. But
what, therapy or?
Therapy, yeah. Talking to a therapist.
Yeah. You know,
counseling and stuff. It definitely had some stigma to it.
Oh, sure. For a long time. I think it's fairly recent where it, I mean, I still think there was some weird stigma. I think of it like even like my favorite, one of my favorite movies of all time is Ordinary People.
Yeah.
And I think about that movie, you know, like Marriage. I mean, I know they're repressed, you know, wasps in that movie, but like Mary Tyler Moore's character doesn't want anyone to know like that their son's seeing a therapist or.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very like, it's embarrassing to the family. Mm-hmm. Like there's some shame to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange, I mean, I'm so down with mental health and telling, you know, people are like, have like boundaries around that stuff. And I don't really know. I understand people being private about it, but I don't think it should be stigmatized in such a way that it's like, well, I mean, it's, if you're diabetic, are you ashamed of that? Right. You just let people know, like, here's what's going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm from the South and just, it was not, no one did it.
No one did it.
Wow. And my mom started to do it when my parents were together. And my dad was just like, just couldn't believe it. So threatened by it. And so threatened by it probably because she was getting tools that she could sort of break this cycle, this dynamic they had, you know?
Do you think he was like threatened by that or it was like what people would think?
I think it was that, personally. I think it was sort of like, you know, she was kind of breaking the contract of the dysfunction they shared, you know, not sort of verbatim, but it's sort of like, that's basically what it was. And it was crazy. Like she became a much stronger person and she made him a stronger person. Like they stayed together. They both passed away, but they stayed together as a result of it. But he was
Yeah, I mean, your dad. I mean, we're all like my dad's. Everyone's just a product of their generation and how they grew up. I mean, I'm not saying anything intelligent or original, but like, it's like they, of course, no one talked about it then.
Yeah.
No one talked about therapy. It was not something you do, or they had images of what a mental institution was, or crazy people and all that stuff. I think it's really amazing to see that it's become. Or there's an active attempt to destigmatize mental issues, mental health issues. Even like, you know, when Facebook kind of started, or when I was on, and I was surprised seeing that when people would post stuff about their depression or something, I felt like, why are you doing that? It's so embarrassing. Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess that's my age. But now it's so like, oh, I think it's so healthy.
Yeah.
Like it's, because at first I was like, oh, they're trying to get attention. Like something stupid. I had some judgment about it. But like, I'm so like, yeah, it's so healthy. Just talk about it.
Yeah.
Just talk about it. It's interesting.
My daughter, she's 14, and they, I had heard something about this, about sort of the flip side of this, of, you know, being aware of, like for a 14-year-old to be like, oh, this person's bipolar with ADHD, blah, blah, blah. Knowing all this kind of like jargon that I didn't know for a long time.
Yeah.
But the sort of flip side of that is it's almost like a WebMD kind of thing where they will self-diagnose themselves whatever, you know? And so they sort of telling it, I've heard their friends be like, well, I think I might have sort of, I don't have acute anxiety, but I definitely have anxiety. Like, yeah. So they're all kind of like diagnosing themselves and stuff. And there's a good and bad to that where I'm like, yeah, you don't want to, because then you're going to saddle yourself with this kind of like, you know, self handicap, you know, you kind of like put this thing on you that it's like, no, I think you're just a teenager.
You
will genuinely grow out of this.
Must be hard having kids.
Oh my god. It's so easy during a pandemic. It's a cruise.
I have a dog, so I get it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've got two dogs too. Not to one everybody.
What kind of dogs do you have?
I got a Pekingese Shih Tzu mix, a little Pika shit, and then a Wheaton Terrier poodle.
Oh.
Yeah. He is very old. Like, he just turned the corner of, like, oldness, where I'm like, oh. Like, when he sits down, he just, he has no muscles here, like, on his shoulders and stuff, so he's just these little sticks, and he, like, falls over very easily now and stuff. I'm like, oh.
How old is he?
He's probably, like, coming up on 14, so.
Baby.
I know. Not much longer. Ugh, hate it. All right, so I think we're rounding the bend, but I did want to sort of harken back to Groundlings stuff a little bit. I wanted to see if you, just knowing, I'm sure you pore endlessly over the photos of all the great performers who have come through there, but I was going to see how many bald Groundlings you can name.
Okay. Of all time?
Of all time.
Me?
Sure.
Jim Rash.
Yes. I was going to ask, do you ever get mistaken for Jim Rash?
Yes. Yes. And he's one of my close, he's a close friend of mine. And he was like ahead of me in the Groundlings program and stuff. And he was like my director when I was in Sunday Company. And then I got in the main company. And I mean, I always felt like I was like known as the poor man's Jim Rash. Like, there was actually one time somebody came up to me in the lobby at the Groundlings, and they said, "Oh, I saw you do the Thursday night show, and you were so funny." And I'm like, "Oh, thank you." And they were talking, and then they were talking, they're like, "Oh, you did the scene with Mike McDonald." I'm like, "I didn't do a scene with Mike McDonald. He wasn't in the show." And then I realized, "Oh, they think I'm Jim Rash."
That's so funny.
So I just went, "Oh, okay." And I called him later. I go, "I just got a compliment for you."
I should relay this compliment.
Yeah.
To you.
Okay, so there was him, there was Steve Pierce, who's been gone for a while. It sounds like he's dead. He's just been alumni for like, who am I missing who's bald?
Crazy Uncle Joe?
You mean, there's a bunch of, you mean like Ted Michaels?
Jordan? He's not my, maybe, I don't know. Wait, you said
Jordan? Does Jordan have hair? I can't remember.
I don't think so. Jordan Black.
Yeah, so Jordan Black. Yeah. Ted Michaels, does he have hair?
Oh, okay. No, so I was going to ask about Ted Michaels. I said, Ted Michaels, assuming he is bald because he has a hat on in his photo.
Yeah.
So I just assumed that he was bald.
Yeah, I think he's bald. Oh, God.
Roy Jenkins.
Yeah, Roy is baldish.
Yeah.
He keeps some hair
around.
He's
bald.
Yeah, but doesn't he keep some hair around?
Yeah, but that's still bald.
He's
husky bald.
Roy. Tons of thinning guys. Oh, Kevin Kirkpatrick, too. Do you know Kevin?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's bald.
going way back on SNL, John Lovitz.
Oh, yeah, John Lovitz.
Is he bald? I mean, he's...
I don't know. Is John Lovitz bald?
I know. He's like...
Now.
He's Widow Peak... Thick little tuft in the front, and I think he's got like a little solar panel in the back.
And it's also confusing because so many of these people I've seen like in my brain, in my memory, like with wigs on. Like I'm like, oh, are they bald?
That's the difference between UCB and
and
you guys are wigtastic.
We're wigtastic. We get shamed for our wigs.
Yeah, yeah. We were like, yeah.
I can't wait to put wigs on. Like. Put more wig on top of a wig.
That's so funny.
Yeah, who else is dead? I
think that's all I got on my list, and I went back in the 80s.
What about? Really... Oh no, I was gonna make a dumb joke.
What's that?
I was gonna say Kristen Wiig's bald, but she's not. That's not even funny. It's not even funny.
No, she. Well, or maybe she is.
She's not.
She unconsciously changed her last name to Wig because she's so ashamed that she's bald.
That's it.
And she's confessing it.
Her original name was Kristen Bald.
Yeah, Kristen Shinehead.
I know I'm
Kristen Shine.
Yeah, that's sort of an interesting question. I've never really thought about the bald Groundlings.
Yeah.
But I do know, I will say this. It's been a while, but for a long fucking time, if I was in an improv with Jim Rash or Steve Pierce or something like that, and you'd be on stage, inevitably, and you ask the audience for a suggestion of something, it would almost always be bald or Mr. Clean or something. Something like, you know, like there's no other thing you can body shame people for anymore. But like, bald is still okay.
Completely.
Like, you're not going to say that about anybody else's body who's standing up on stage. But like, bald! And then everyone laughs. And you're standing on stage and it feels like you're in high school with everyone pointing and laughing at you.
I know.
And the improv hasn't even started.
Yeah, I know. It's so strange. We've said it before. It's like, that is the one that's the still accepted sort of like body shaming joke.
Isn't that weird? And what is that about? Like, you're making fun of somebody because they're a man who doesn't have hair, and that's funny. Like, why is that? It's like there's something tied into being a man or being a masculine or something like that. A man has hair. And if you don't, you're not a full-on man?
Well, it's in the Bible. Samson. Look what happened to Samson. He just got some of his hair cut.
And she lost all of her power because of that.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh, women, right?
I was calling Samson a she. Anyway. But it goes back to the Bible.
Yeah, it's all biblical, everything. Yeah, I don't know what that is that people are still just like, I'm just picking at you. Hey, I'm just making fun of you. Just making fun of the way you look. People think it's totally cool.
Yeah, I guess I haven't. It's jarring if somebody comments on it now.
Yeah.
Like,
I had somebody, I can't, maybe it wasn't this kind of like not great movie idea, but they.
I bet it was great.
It was, I was great. Good. And everything around it was wobbly. No, but there was this guy who was like, hey, I'm going to do, I wrote some, stuff I'm going to say to your guy.
Oh, no.
This is sort of the improv part of it. It's like, oh, you kind of make it. And it does, like, he made fun of me for being skinny and being bald. And
great.
And the bald thing he, like, really leaned into. And I think I kind of undercut it by saying to the director, like, this doesn't track very well for his character, like, to be saying that. He's like, you're right. Why is he? Yeah, we're not going to use this. And I was like, oh, thank God.
And it's also like an easy joke. It's so, so easy.
You know, such a strange. But honestly, like if they had been solid jokes, I'd be down for it.
Yeah.
But dumb ones, I'm like, don't waste the time.
Yeah, make it a smart bald joke.
Yeah. Make an informed observation on the pate.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, thank you, Mitch, for joining just little old Brian Husky here. It was great. Do you have anything that you want to pitch, poach, promote?
Drew Droege and I are doing our show at the Dynasty Typewriter. I just had a look at the date. On March 1st at 8 o'clock on Tuesday night. It's called... it's Mitch and Drew, and we've never felt younger. And nice. I guess you can get tickets at the Dynasty Typewriter the website. I don't know. It's a pitch. I'm recurring on that show, All Rise, and it came back for a third season.
So that's your lawyer.
I get to say, I actually get really excited in the script when I get an objection. When they say objection, it's so fucking great to say objection.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, shave your head and go bald. See you later.
Talking bald, life is unfair when you lose all your hair, but now you've got someone to talk to. Brian and Charlie have a hairless party.
Hi, I'm Eve Sturgis, and I am so excited for season 4 of my podcast, Everything's Relative, coming at you March 4th from Campfire Media. Every week, I have a new guest with an amazing story. I talk with people like Erin Jackson about her gorgeous magazine, Peter Bunny about his best-selling book, Heidi Marble about her project for adoptees. I talk with this guy named Ryan who blew me away with his honesty and his super cute Scottish accent. Come find out how people think they know who they are until they don't. And it could happen to you. DNA testing is changing everything. March 4th, subscribe and listen.
Campfire.